So you mentioned, you know, kind of all of these different ways that people can experience this. You mentioned it usually takes 5 or 6 doctors for somebody to get the right treatment. That seems like a pretty poor like track record for the medical field, just to, for like people to figure out kind of what's going on. Why is it so hard for doctors in the field to diagnose the right things?
I think it's kind of twofold. So I think the first part of it is going to be dizziness is complicated. Okay. And so I think it's really important, especially most patients will either start with their primary care physician or start in urgent care. And what the physicians are really trying to make sure is that this is nothing life-threatening. The patient's not going to stroke out. They don't have a brain tumor, kind of all the scary big stuff. And so it takes a moment for most physicians to be able to kind of triage the patients properly.
Welcome to the Small Business Storytellers, the show where we dive deep into the stories and secrets of businesses focused on not just making money, but making the world a better place. My name is Seth Silvers, and my passion is helping businesses grow that are making the world a better place. Every episode, you will hear from transformational leaders and business owners as we dive into what has helped them grow and what has helped them stay true to themselves along the way. Also, every week, we are hosting live conversations with our guests on Fireside Chat, where we give you, the audience, the opportunity to ask them your burning questions. So make sure to join us live on Fireside Chat on your mobile device. Let's dive in. Hello, 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 everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Small Business Storytellers. Today, I am excited to have Brooke Pierce here with me, and we're going to talk about something that we can kind of demystify a little bit and really hear Brooke's story behind her and her partner's business in LA, where they are working at Dizzy and Vertigo. And they have a unique story about how this kind of came to be, as well as the customers and patients that they have the opportunity to work with. And so when I heard their story, I wanted to bring them onto the show, onto the Small Business Storytellers, because I believe that their story is important, but also because when I heard it, I immediately knew a few people in my life where it was like, oh, they have questions about what you guys do. And so I felt like we wanted to have this conversation where we kind of dive into demystifying dizziness and the world of vertigo. So Brooke Pierce, welcome to the Small Business Storytellers. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good.
Well, Brooke, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. I'm looking forward to this just because I love learning about new things and learning about things that are out of my wheelhouse. And so we'll get to do that. We'll get, you know, audience members will get to ask questions about the topics that we're learning about and about Brooke's story. But Brooke, give us some context for just tell us what your business is. Where are you guys based? Give us kind of some context for what your life looks like right now.
Yeah. So I actually am one of the co-founders of Dizzy and Vertigo Institute. So we are in Los Angeles, West Hollywood area, across from Cedar Cyanide, in kind of like the Beverly Hills, West LA area. We started the practice a couple of years ago, and we specialize in inner ear dizziness. So it's kind of a really different kind of niche field. Right. But myself and my business partner, we've just been kind of grinding things out as far as vestibular dizziness. And it's been quite a ride.
Yeah. And that sounds really like really niche, like, oh my gosh, you have an institute focusing on, you know, inner ear dizziness, but it's something that a lot of people deal with, isn't it?
It's so common. And I think that's kind of the crazy thing. I was listening to your intro, you know, for the stats we always use are 1 in 3 people are going to experience an inner ear type of dizziness throughout the course of their lifetime, which is wild because, you know, 1 in 3 people, whether it's a spinning vertigo or an imbalance or even an unsteady sensation. It's just crazy. So it's a lot more prevalent than I think people realize.
Right. How did you guys get this started? You told me before you were kind of working in another clinic, but give us the origin story of the Dizzy and Vertigo Institute of Los Angeles.
So we actually were working at another small practice, and we were approached a couple of times by patients to, you know, kind of do our own thing and start our own thing to make it a lot more accessible and a lot more user friendly. And just it took a while to kind of keep hearing the same narrative over and over for us to actually take the leap. The leap is pretty expensive in this space. There's a lot of medical equipment and a lot of pretty sophisticated technology that you have to come into the space with in order to do it right. And so I think it was just always very cost prohibitive for us, or at least we thought, you know, the climb was going to be too steep. And we actually, it's kind of where Mark Cuban came into this whole picture. But, you know, we decided to start the practice, knew that it was the right thing to do for our patient population. And then with regard to a lot of the heavy lifting, we just needed an investor that was able to really kind of take the ride with us. And so Mark was a patient of ours years prior and just really believed in what we were doing and knew how important it was for people to get the right services and the right care at the right time. So, you know, that's how we kind of pulled all of this together and were able to actually open the Institute.
Yeah, that, it's always incredible to see who, there's always people around us when we start businesses. There's always like people that kind of give us that push. Like I feel like very rarely is somebody just at home and it's just them on their own. Like I feel like there's usually these moments of somebody saying, hey, you should start this, or you sharing a story with somebody and then being like, okay, hey, we're behind you and we're supportive. Were there some other people, you know, obviously Mark Cuban is an investor, but were there some other people kind of in your circle in that early season when you were kind of thinking about starting it that really helped you to make that jump?
I think it really was my partner, Chelsea. So, you know, the two of us, we're both vestibular audiologists, which is even in itself kind of a niche specialty. So audiologist, we have our doctorate in hearing and balance, but most people will actually just specialize in the hearing arm of it. And so just being around another professional that still had the passion for that, you know, kind of part of what we were doing and the story, you know, of hearing what happens with dizzy patients, you know, we just always bounced ideas off of each other of, you know, this is crazy. This should be a lot more accessible. It's almost sad to hear the stories of people who are so, you know, at the top of their game and then they just get sick and they get kind of bounced around from, you know, the average patient's going to see 5 to 6 different specialists before they get the right services. Which is just, to us, it was unacceptable. You hear these people's stories all day, every day, all day, every day. So I think it was her and I just kind of hearing the same stories over and over and knowing that there was a way better way to do this, that, you know, we just kind of, it was just time. We were at a point where it was time to take the leap and you got to go all in both feet, you know, and just not look back. And so we were both ready at the same time to do that. And I don't think I would have done it alone. I think having a partner, especially for how big of a footprint we were willing to lay out the gate. We didn't do this organically, little by little, you know, tiny steps. We really went for it in the middle of Los Angeles. And, you know, we have some pretty big entities around us. And so we knew if we were going to run, we were going to run big. And so the two of us kind of had the like mind at the same time.
Right. What made you want to go into this field? Like even, you know, you were working in the same field before you started your own practice. But for you and your partner, what, you know, was it was it your own story or seeing other people's struggles?
So mine was definitely kind of a personal story. My grandfather was actually a pretty decent athlete. And he actually had an inner ear surgery that completely wiped out his balance. And so for me, it was really just mind blowing that you can have somebody who was just so athletic and capable, and then all of a sudden they're completely unable to do simple tasks. So that really kind of piqued my interest in the vestibular system, which is that inner ear part. And just really kind of taking the technology and making sense of it. So it really just became a very kind of personal journey to see how far I could take it as far as, you know, the diagnostic piece and then the treatment piece and really making sense of how the system was able to rehabilitate, whether it was post-operatively, you know, after a surgery, or if there was some type of other reason that caused the system to change.
Right. Yeah. I find most people have there's always some kind of personal connection to kind of what we're doing and why. And you mentioned 1 in 3 people will struggle with dizziness or vertigo at some point. Is that just like, you know, if I feel dizzy, or like kind of give some more context of like what the types of challenges that, like, if people are experiencing them, then like they should kind of be looking to get some kind of help.
So it's pretty wild. So if you think, you know, even if you type into Google just dizziness, there's so many things that can cause dizziness. the way we kind of work through with a patient is, you know, making sure that they're medically cleared. So you want to make sure that it's nothing that's life-threatening. So out the gate, you know, nothing's wrong with the heart, nothing's wrong with the brain. Usually that will leave the patient with kind of the big question of, is the ear involved? The ear is actually the GPS of the balance system, which is so wild to think because it's such a tiny little apparatus. You have one on the right side and then one on the left side, kind of behind where we associate our ears to be. And essentially what happens if it's an inner ear dizziness, we use dizziness as an umbrella term. So there's a lot of different sensations that you can feel. So it can be a true vertigo, which is like spinning, you know, like if you got off a ride or you feel like, you know, the world is kind of spinning around you, that's vertigo, versus an imbalance, an unsteadiness, a disequilibrium. It can even be like a visual disturbance where it kind of feels like the world around you is moving, or like even like an Alice in Wonderland kind of sensation. Or even that you're walking on like an uneven surface, like on marshmallows, or it feels like you're walking on sand. So all of those different sensations are disturbance. So it's really important, and that's kind of where it gets super complicated. If you're not in this space all the time and you're not really listening to the story of what the patient's feeling and when the symptoms started and who they've seen and what was happening around that time frame, you can miss a lot of this.
So you mentioned, you know, kind of all of these different ways that people can experience this. You mentioned it usually takes 5 or 6 doctors for somebody to get the right treatment. That seems like a pretty poor like track record for the medical field, just for like people to figure out kind of what's going on. Why is it so hard for doctors in the field to diagnose the right things?
I think it's kind of twofold. So I think the first part of it is going to be dizziness is complicated. Okay. And so I think it's really important, especially most patients will either start with their primary care physician or start in urgent care. And what the physicians are really trying to make sure is that this is nothing life-threatening. The patient's not going to stroke out. They don't have a brain tumor, kind of all this scary big stuff. And so it takes a moment for most physicians to be able to kind of triage the patients properly. With that being said, once they've been medically cleared, in our experience, what happens is patients start to ping pong and they go from specialist to specialist to specialist, and they just kind of get shuffled. And so what happens a lot of times is, you know, everybody, when patients are kind of moving from, let's say they go cardiology and the heart's fine, and then they go neurology and the brain's fine, and then they end up with otolaryngology and the structures of the ear are fine. No one is taking the time to really understand what it could be. It's a lot of what it isn't. And so that's where patients just kind of get kind of passed to the side, to the side, to the side. So we try to spin it a little bit in the sense that when patients are actually at our door, kind of going through the story with us, I spin it in the sense that, good, thank goodness you didn't end up with neurology. Thank goodness that you had the imaging and it's not a brain tumor. But now let's talk through functionally what the ear is doing. And I don't have to guess. There are, you know, we have 15 different pieces of equipment from a scientific standpoint that I can actually quantify the signal coming from the ear. I don't have to guess. And so it really at that point is, you know, we'll hear from patients, well, God, I wish I would have known about you guys months ago or years ago or decades ago in some patient's case. And I think that kind of circling back around to the why of we did this was that has to stop. Like it, you cannot live for months or years or decades in the state. It's extremely debilitating. So to make this a lot more common, a lot more kind of top of mind to be able to be evaluated by a vestibular specialist is really kind of what our drive is. And hopefully within, you know, the course of what we're doing with the Institute, but, you know, definitely within the course of our careers, that narrative changes pretty significantly.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so important. I think, I mean, so much of helping people, so much of health is really asking the right questions. And I think that, you know, we're kind of in the middle of this movement health-wise where we're beginning to realize that, you know, kind of returning back to, okay, what's actually causing the problems as opposed to just treating all of the symptoms. And I've talked to a lot of people that are going into the medical field because they, you know, kind of want to help to change the reputation of the medical field. So people know when you go to see a, you know, a physician or professional, whatever, that you actually they're going to be looking for what's the source, as opposed to just kind of, you know, trying, like, they're asking the right questions at the end of the day. And mm-hmm. I think that that's so important. You have decided your company to actually be like out of network, you know, to kind of intentionally, you've made some pretty intentional decisions in your business to kind of improve the accessibility. Tell me about why you guys made that call and kind of what was the motive behind that? Because I think that was really unique.
Yeah, it definitely was a very strategic decision. Coming from, you know, our previous experience and the industry that we were in, I saw a lot of mismanagement and a lot of holes that were in the care that patients were receiving. And it became very one size fits all. And that's not what helps patients efficiently and effectively. And so we knew, especially because we kind of started in the beginning looking at a lot of these insurance contracts, and there was just no way that we could provide the level of care with, you know, the compensation that they were willing to pay the institute, but even more than that, the time and the energy that we were able to give the patient and the resources. And so we just knew that if we were going to do this right, we had to allocate the right time and the right resources and the right referral database to be able to help our patients get across the finish line, which is to get them where they needed to be and be asymptomatic or managing their symptoms the best that they could. So it became a very strategic decision in the sense that we knew that it was going to be cash-based. We were going to be able to define our own rules. We were going to be able to define the quality of care that we'd be able to provide to our patients and the volume. And that really has been a game changer and really allowed us to do what we know needs to be done.
Yeah, you mentioned that's been a game changer. Like, give us some, what are some stories about just how that has made an impact, how making that decision that was probably challenging at the beginning and maybe even some people disagreed with, how has that like made your model and made your practice a lot more robust and able to serve more people?
So what it's really done is it's really taken the cuffs off of us as far as the time that we can spend with the patients, where I can get the patients from a referral standpoint, what tests I can do, you know, for the patient, and really allow me to triage them the way I know they need to be, you know, kind of move through the diagnostic process. From a therapeutic standpoint, or kind of getting them the treatment that they need, I can use whatever technology I feel is appropriate. We've designed some pretty cool software and treatment programs that I know, you know, would not be accessible otherwise, as far as, you know, within certain kind of insurance carriers or within certain networks. So it's just really allowed us to be as cutting edge and as outside of the box as we know, you know, a lot of our patients need and deserve. So it's really just allowed us to kind of cut a lot of the red tape that we were looking at, and let patients get direct access to what they need as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that there's some people that are listening that are like, okay, cool. You know, this sounds fancy. You know, you're in Hollywood, like all of this stuff, it feels inaccessible. Mm-hmm. Do you think that over the next couple of years that, one, your work as well as, you know, other work in this field will become more accessible to more people so that, you know, kind of people that maybe are not living in LA can get the support and help they need?
So I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions is that, you know, we are in Los Angeles, that we are inaccessible, or even in the West LA area. The reason that we've come into that kind of location as far as kind of our bricks and mortars facility is it has really allowed us to really work and collaborate with a lot of the heavy hitters kind of in the industry and be in a very centralized location that patients can access us and kind of our programs. So pre-COVID and kind of pre some of the previous travel restrictions, patients were able to actually go through and access a lot of what we were doing via telehealth. We are licensed in quite a few states throughout the country. And really, we're able to, at that point, go through and do a lot of consultations with patients via video chat, or we call it telehealth. And so that really kind of blew the lid off of a lot of this for patients, where if they're sitting in, you know, Nevada, or they're sitting in Washington, or they're sitting in Texas, they can actually set up an appointment. We'll go through their history. We'll go through kind of what's been happening, and they have direct access to us in our clinic. Post-COVID, and kind of as we've gone through a lot of changes and a lot of kind of modifications and a lot of our technology accessibility, we've got a whole online program and virtual reality software that we use, and desktop versions and mobile versions for a lot of the treatment applications. And so what really was, you know, kind of circa 1960, which is a model that a lot of different clinics throughout the country use, where patient has to go in, they'll do a V&G test, which is basically a battery of tests to look at the ear. And then they would go to, you know, vestibular therapy or get some head and eye movement exercises. We just completely shook that up and flipped it upside down, and knew that that was not going to be the way of the future. And it wasn't going to be the way that technology was driving all of this. And so even though it sounds kind of fancy and it sounds kind of unattainable, we've really made it our mission to not make it that. This needs to be very user-friendly. It needs to be simple in the sense that, you know, you access it on a lot of different devices or different programs that you already have at your disposal. And you're able to still kind of fold in the treatment that you need, or what a lot of our dizzy patients need, within your daily routine and within the resources that you already have kind of at your fingertips.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's, I love all of the innovation and development and how quickly it's happened in the last year and a half. And obviously the circumstances have not been ideal with the COVID pandemic, but I think that there's so many industries that just the accessibility has been accelerated. Telemedicine is one of those ones. I needed to see a doctor for an injury that was not life-threatening, but I knew that I was starting to get an infection, so I needed a prescription. And I talked to several medical people in my family and realized, you know, we kind of knew what we needed to get, but I needed to see a doctor to get a prescription. Mm-hmm. And we were in the place where it was like, We need a consult here. Like, I don't really need to like go into a, and it just made way more sense. And I mm-hmm. made way more sense to do a telemedicine option. And we were able to get the solutions and get, you know, initially get healthy way quicker rather than having to wait. And it was also cheaper. So I think that's one thing that like the technology has caught up to where people can get more support and more consults. And I think a lot of people haven't realized yet that it can actually be less expensive. Yeah. In many cases to do telemedicine. So I think that's amazing that you guys have been able to roll. I mean, and you launched not too long before the pandemic, didn't you?
Yeah. So it'll be 2 years in July okay. as far as patient volume. Yep.
Okay. So you had kind of a fun 6 months and then a lot of things started to change.
Right. So why wouldn't you, have a startup right before COVID? So it's been wonderful in the sense that it really did. It made us take a step back and say, okay, what is strategically going to work? What do people need right now? And then, you know, how do we give them the runway to kind of make it happen? And it really, I think for a lot of people, that's exactly what you had to do. And it's really kind of worked to our benefit now that things are open and Los Angeles has opened, along with the rest of the country. Now we're able to actually see kind of the fruits of our labor and really what was happening, under the guise of COVID. And now that things are starting to really come back full circle, for a lot of people in a lot of industries, it's really been a blessing for us.
Yeah. Yeah. It's neat to hear the stories of resilience, you know, on this podcast. When COVID first started, we were starting to hear a lot of the stories of how people were pivoting and innovating kind of to stay alive. Mm-hmm. And so now, you know, hopefully on the back end of this pandemic, as you know, a lot of things are different than they were a year ago. It's neat to hear some of the stories of resilience. What do you think have been some of the key factors for you and your business partner and your team there that have really helped you to kind of weather the storm of the last 18 months of just wildness and unpredictability, and also being in California, which was one of the states that was kind of the most locked down for the longest period of time. And I know there was a lot of people felt a lot of things about how the pandemic was handled in California. And so what were some of the keys that really helped you guys to stay consistent and to be resilient through this season?
I think the biggest thing for us was really understanding that people are people. You know, we all really wanted to be, you know, you want to be healthy, you want to be able to take care of your family, and you want to be treated with kindness. And so for us, as crazy as things got in California and as divisive as things became, and, you know, our office was at the epicenter of a lot of it as far as the location, it really was taking a step back and understanding that people just want to be able to be happy. And if you're sick or you're dizzy, you're not happy. And then everything kind of stems from there. And so for us, it was, even though there was so much swelling that was very big at the very core, we tried to keep things, you know, in our wheelhouse. And what could we do? And what was going to be our gift to the people in our area and our gift to our family and friends, and really just make things as positive as we could. As things got kind of dark and wild, it really kept coming back to that. And so just leading with a little bit of kindness, even when we didn't feel like being kind, it really kind of allowed us to just see the other side of it and to push harder and to really make sure that this is something that we really wanted and that this was something that was viable. And, right. And now that we've come through that, or at least it feels like the smoke is starting to clear, knowing that we made such a difference for a lot of our patients through that process and allowed them the resources to be able to navigate a lot of the pain and the frustration and the craziness that came along with, you know, the last year and a half, was, that was kind of our gift, you know, that we kind of got back. And now it's full steam ahead. And so now really seeing what happened as a startup right before COVID, shucking and jiving through COVID, and then now on the other end of it, it's been, you know, just compounded. And I think it just kind of accelerated things in a good way.
Absolutely. Brooke, I want to ask you, kind of while we're waiting for any questions, who should get help? I'm sure there's a lot of people that think, okay, maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't. Like, what are some of the symptoms that you would kind of recommend? Okay. You know, it might be a good thing to go and see somebody, or there's probably also people that feel kind of helpless. Like, oh, this is something I'm just going to deal with for the rest of my life. Help me to kind of like, help us to speak to those people and to kind of give good insight to some people who might be listening and say, okay, I'm going to go get help now.
So I'm just going to throw it out there. I think everybody should dig into their dizziness and figure out what the root cause of it is, because some of it can be scary and a lot of it can be simple. And so really understanding what kind of camp you fall into is important. The simple stuff to me is obviously the vestibular dizziness or the inner ear dizziness. We hear a lot of times from people that, you know, I was told years ago that I just have to live like this, or this, you know, it is what it is, or I just have to suck it up. Not the case. Technology and our understanding and the resources have changed so dramatically, even in the last 5 years, that it's really important to make sure that you're in front of the right people, hearing the correct answers, and that it's actually validated with objective data. Because again, a lot of this, there's no guesswork to this anymore. It's really a matter of very definitive, objective kind of data that supports the subjective symptoms that a lot of people are feeling. So, you know, my 2 cents is always to get it checked out, make sure you know definitively what you're looking at. And a majority of the time you can pinpoint it. Sometimes there'll be that gray area where we just kind of throw our hands up, or, you know, it kind of goes into a camp of, I'm not quite sure what we're looking at, but most people you're able to kind of figure out where you're at and then pull in the right resources.
Yeah, I think that's a great kind of delineation of that, and great to just encourage anybody to really understand what's going on. And I think, you know, we've seen in so many areas just how education is power. And I think that's true with our body as well and with our own health. I want to welcome Joy to the stage. Joy has a question about our vestibular maintenance. And also I want to highlight that Joy used to be a stage manager at the Sydney Opera House, which I think is pretty awesome. So Joy, welcome to the stage. If you want to go ahead and unmute yourself and ask Brooke your question.
Yes, thanks. Thank you, Seth. And hello, Brooke, to you. Hello from Sydney. Yes, I have been a stage manager for many moons at the Opera House for over 20 years. And I think one of the things that really hurt me was I had dizziness and I had vertigo, and I had a life on headsets for for decades, so just navigating that. So my question was, so what exercises could we do in like a daily practice to support a vestibular system? I feel like in Sydney, I didn't really know anything at all. And, you know, having a perforated eardrum, having to go through that during working on the Olympics and being on headsets was so bad. I was crashing into doorways as I walked through them. And then like maybe 10, 15 years later, I had a bout of vertigo. So had that sort of corrected by an osteo and doing different exercises. But I'm really keen to wonder if it will come back at some point, and then what would you recommend to do every day?
So the biggest thing your vestibular system needs is movement. And so as long as you're exposing yourself to normal movement, you know, exercising and, you know, reading and writing and riding bikes or whatever you're going to be doing on or off the stage, is really important to keep the thresholds and the system itself working. So as a general rule, if your system is healthy currently, just doing your normal and not, we call them maladaptive strategies. So not kind of falling into any type of maladaptive strategies where you're moving a little bit slower in order to not provoke symptoms, or you're avoiding certain activities in order to not provoke symptoms. As long as you're not kind of coddling or babying the system, doing your normal should sustain it. Now, if or when there's a recurrence in the vestibulopathy or a weakness in the balance part of the ear, vestibular rehabilitation therapy exercises are kind of the classic go-to, you know, sequence of head movements and eye movements, sequence of balance exercises are pretty standard. We do things pretty differently in the sense that we don't just globally go through exercises. So I want to see kind of what the current state of your system is. And so that's where it really becomes, you know, a current snapshot diagnostically of what your system is currently functioning at and what it's capable of. And then designing the right exercises and the correct kind of thresholds and movement based on where your system is currently performing. So it, as a general rule, if you're feeling great right now, keep going for it. Do everything you're still doing. If the reoccurrence occurs, you'd want to loop back around to the specialist that you were seeing, or, you know, even you can drop us an email or give us a call and I can kind of plug you in with some colleagues in the area that would really, you know, be able to get you exercises that would make sense.
Yeah, I'm feeling really good. Have been for the last couple of years, but when it happened, the vertigo in particular, it was truly debilitating. So, you know, I was doing sort of my own, trying to look on the net and find research and just learn more. So it's wonderful that you've created such a fantastic resource over there. But do you think you can still have an underdeveloped vestibular? Like, I'm thinking back to my son and you know, some of the things that we did when he was young. To going to an OT. So do you think that as an adult that perhaps my vestibular is underdeveloped?
So there's different causes or different etiologies of dizziness that can be congenital or just kind of from when you're born moving forward, and then genetic, so that they can run in families. It just depends on the type of dizziness. So there's a specific type of vertigo. It's called vestibular migraine, or basically think of the migraine part of it as the aura becomes the dizziness. And so that type of dizziness can run in families and it can pop up. It's usually the most prominent type of dizziness that'll pop up in children. So it's really, you know, again, the guesswork kind of goes out the window now that we have all these really cool cameras and software that we can actually quantify all of this with. But most of the time, especially with children, if there's any type of delay or there's any type of imbalance or unsteadiness, right away we go through and actually, you know, try to figure out from a diagnostic standpoint what we're looking at, because that will really drive the rehab and the actual kind of treatment protocols.
It's really fascinating. I think you've answered all my questions. And yeah, thank you for the work that you do. And thanks for the time, Seth.
Thanks, Joy.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for jumping on, Joy. I remember the first time that I ever heard anything about vertigo was actually with my former business partner. And he, we were working and he got a bout of vertigo And I mean, he was pretty much out of commission for like 2 or 3 weeks. And I remember him calling me and just kind of being like, you know, telling me that, like, you know, I felt like the room was spinning. He was having a hard time walking, all of this stuff. And I didn't think he was crazy, but I had no comprehension for it. It was just like, what in the world is going on? And then actually a few years later, I haven't talked to him to see if he feels like these are connected. I bet you think that they are, but he was actually, painting a house or doing something on a house up on a ladder and just had a bout of dizziness and blacked out and fell and had a pretty significant head injury, because of it. And it was just like, and I mean, he's young like me, like in our 20s. And so, it was so interesting because that's something I've never dealt with. It was really hard to empathize. It was really hard to like understand and just be like, what in the world is that? Like, I can understand a broken arm or something, but it just seemed so odd. And so I think the work that you're doing is so, so important. And I think there's a lot of people that they just have no idea of the quality of life. Like they just think that it's just part of how their life goes when their quality of life could drastically improve. Mm-hmm. And like you're saying, it's just so much more commonplace than we even know. Mm-hmm. This has been wonderful. And I'm really glad that we got to dive deeper into your story. And as we kind of bring this to a close, I want to just give you an opportunity and just kind of plug what you're doing, Brooke, and how can people find you? What is the best way for people to get in touch with you as they hear this and they say, okay, I want to reach out. I want to get in touch. I want to, you know, fix some of these problems that we're dealing with.
Yeah. So I think the easiest way is on our website. So our website is dizzyandvertigo.com. So DIZZYANDVERTIGO. We have a lot of information on our actual website. Our phone number is listed on there, and then our Instagram handle. So we try to keep our Instagram and a lot of our social media kind of light and fluffy, and we use a lot of memes. And our goal is to really help kind of make the education of this a lot more streamlined, because I agree, you know, knowledge is power. Understanding what is happening in your system is a lot less scary, and it's a lot more empowering and resourceful than being spoken to with a lot of medical terminology and jargon. So, hop on our website. It's one of the best ways to kind of look at the resources and a lot of the information we have posted. And if you are in Los Angeles, we'd love to see you. You can give our office a call, 310-954-2207.
Wonderful. Well, Brooke, thank you so much for joining us here on the Small Business Storytellers. We really appreciate it. And again, anybody that's listening, I encourage you to go and check out the amazing work that they're doing at the Dizzy and Vertigo Institute of Los Angeles, and visit their website at www.dizzyandvertigo.com. Brooke, thank you so much for joining us on the Small Business Storytellers. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Seth.
Absolutely.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Small Business Storytellers. If you've wanted to start a podcast and have been wondering if you can use podcasting to grow your business, but don't know where to start, I'd love to talk. Head to successwithstories.com/podcast to learn exactly how to launch, grow, and profit from a podcast for your business. Again, that is successwithstories.com/podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you like this episode, share it with someone you know who would also like it. If you want to be a guest on the podcast or know someone who would be a great guest on the show, let me know. Thank you, and we will see you next time on the Small Business Storytellers.